Welcome to New Thinking for a New World, a Tilburg Foundation podcast. I am Alan Stoga, your host. Each week, I bring you conversations with people who think differently about the great issues that are shaping our world. Geopolitics, disruptive tech, mass migration, the changing climate, culture wars, all of it is grist for our mill. I hope you enjoy listening. I also hope you will let me know what you think and that you join the conversation at tilburgfoundation.org. And now for today's episode of New Thinking for a New World. Yi Jianmin is a musician. She's a violinist, a composer, a singer, a conductor. She is also an entrepreneur, having launched Unboxed Musicians, a sustainable creative ecosystem that, at least potentially, offers a new business model for musicians and composers. On this episode of New Thinking for a New World, I want to discuss both those aspects of her life. As a wildly talented musician, and as someone who definitely is thinking differently about the business of music. Let me start, though, by congratulating Yi Jianmin on her recently awarded Doctorate of Music from Yale. Congratulations and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Alan. And thank you for inviting me to be part of this series.
Yi Jianmin, I've listened to some of your music and we plan to play some for our listeners during this podcast. So let's start with the music side of your life. You trained in South Korea, Australia, Germany, and the United States, and you perform both Western classical repertoire and contemporary interdisciplinary work. When you compose or perform, do you feel those different cultural traditions pulling in different directions?
Yes, absolutely. So when I'm playing the traditional Western classical music, the system is already built. We are part of this big canon. The audiences are organized by big institutions. We're part of that. So I don't really have to build something new. I just need to be selected. I have to blend in with already built system. Whereas when I'm creating something new, I have to create an avenue for my music to be heard. Basically, I have to be my own entrepreneur, I have to be my own marketer, I have to be my own producer. But exciting thing about creating my own music, new music, is that from the creation, I can imagine how it could be consumed by the audience. I can, from the start, do something differently and creatively, which I love about.
Which do you enjoy more? Your classical work or your new creative work? And do they interact with each other?
Oh, they absolutely interact with each other. So I do enjoy being part of both worlds. So with Western classical music, there is a built library of all these masterpieces I can learn from, and I can hone my skill as a musician, because classical music, there is a way to perfection. You know, you're always striving for perfection when you are being a classical musician. Whereas when I'm in more of contemporary music scene, you know, you don't have to be perfect, or every mistake becomes part of the creation because it has never been done, you know. And I love creating new experiences to the audience and bringing some of those technical masteries of Western classical training to the new music scene.
There are different norms in those two worlds, I would assume. When you're in the classical world, people remember that great performance of X, or the time that the Boston Symphony did this, or the Melbourne Symphony did that. And you're always compared, I would assume, somehow in that way. In the creative space, the norms are different, almost by definition. Is that confusing at all, and in terms of you as a performer?
Not really. So when people are going to classical music concert, they are already expecting certain aspect, right? They are already No, they already know the music. They are already expecting great performance from the orchestra of certain repertoire. And that is a very valuable experience for the audience. Whereas for new music concert, people are showing up without knowing what is going to happen. And I think there's an aspect of fun on that as well.
I want to come back to that thought in just a second, because it was where I was going next. But something you said, you perform both in the East and in the West. Are audiences different?
Yes. So audiences, surprisingly, are not that different. Of course, there are extremes like new music enthusiasts and classical music enthusiasts who are more like nerds. But people in the middle, the demographic is surprisingly wide and they are just there for good time, basically. And whether that is listening to Boston Symphony playing Beethoven 5 or just walking into a new space, not knowing what to experience, but walking out with, wow, that was new and fun. You know, we had a good time.
Let's talk about that aspect of your work. I've watched some of your recordings on YouTube, of your experimental recordings, and you are clearly trying to expand the concert experience into something that's more immersive, more interdisciplinary, more socially connected, and yes, probably more fun in the sense that fun, that's integral to what you're trying to do, it appears.
Yes, absolutely. So there is one thing I noticed, like 200 years ago when subscription concert was actually first created or sort of like consolidated by Mendelssohn, it was a new thing. You know, before then, the programs were everywhere. There was like a movement of sonata here, and then there was like a lousy symphony orchestra trying to read through Beethoven in second rehearsal. And then Mendelssohn created the subscription model, and that became a norm. But it was repeated over and over again, and some people replicating that now do it sort of habitually. No. So first of all, I wanted to create a program where there is a narrative rather than just putting a sonata there and a symphony there, you know, a chamber music there, because you have to fill those 60 to 75 minutes. And it was actually at the Newer Symphony where I was a fellow that I got to do my first immersive concert, which is like a pilot concert for unboxed musicians. I wanted to create a program where audiences are, you know, part of the program. They're just experiencing this huge flow of narrative and music. So that's why I came up with some themes that's related to nature. And between the pieces, there was a soundscape. So there is no, you know, big clap break, and then people are coughing and there's awkward silences, but it's flowing as a whole. And I was really lucky to be able to have access to Newer Symphony Hall because they have all these technical resources like immersive projection and surround speakers where we played the soundscapes from. And I composed one of my first public pieces then, because we wanted the audience to be part of this musical experiences. So I composed a piece where the audiences were humming along the drone as we were playing. And the last piece, I played Terry Riley in C, which is like a minimalistic work where all the performers are playing these little cells at different times. So it is, you know, improbable music, which means you cannot recreate that experience. It's only happening once, if not through recording. So I had all the performers placed among the audience. So everyone have different experience depending on where they're sitting. And there's this whole soundscape going on. And yeah, I had incredibly overwhelmingly a lot of positive feedback after that experience. Yeah, and then that's why I thought, oh, maybe I should do these things more and more seriously, you know, just continue this.
And is that, as you, in the next phase of your work, you've just moved to Australia, the next phase of your work, are you going to focus more on that kind of innovative, experimental, integrative kind of work and also continue to play the classical repertoire?
Yeah, I think I would continue on both as much as I could. Western classical music always inspires me. There's so much to learn, and you know, still I have to hone my skill as a violinist. If I don't practice, it gets worse. So I would definitely continue. I love doing this. But also, I would love to continue this kind of interdisciplinary works, because that's also where I could be as creative as I can, which I'm really passionate about. So let me just continue on what I did as Unboxed Musicians after that concert I just told you about. So after that, I was actually trying to do more projects like that. I did an all-new music concert at this art gallery where audiences can walk around the gallery and musicians were stationed in different places. And I also did this collaboration with robotic artist Dr. Madeleine Gunn, where I was choreographing the robots and creating music for it. It was very satisfying work, you know, high artistry, but then I realized money-wise, it wasn't working. So right now, I'm actually starting a new project that is going to create more revenue for Unboxed Musicians, which is Mini Music Box. It's a children's music project. And one of the reasons why I shifted to children's music is, first of all, because I felt that rather than knocking on the grown-up market where I have to compete so much with already given music market, there's popular music and, you know, there's so much other music there that they can go to. Whereas with children's music market, there's not much high quality art, I feel. Or if there is any, it's outdated. Like Peter and the Wolf is almost 100 years ago. So I felt the need to supply more high art to children's music market. And I would love to you know, not just looking for audience, but grow the audience for us in the future. In the market, there's like Ping Fong, who is, you know, creating Baby Shark series. And there's Cocomelon and Miss Rachel. By the way, they're great, but I feel like rather than creating artistic value, those are more focused on educational value. So kids are growing up listening to these simplistic songs and MIDI arrangements. And I read somewhere the children's tastes, musical tastes, are formed by age 5. So by neglecting that window and simply supplying those MIDI arranged simple nursery rhymes, we are missing that critical window to actually grow the future audience for the classical music market. So, I saw the gap. We can do something artistically satisfying here as well, teaching them music as music itself. And there are a lot of institutions who already have community outreach programs, but for a lot of them, it's just a box to tick, you know? So with this project I'm doing, Mini Music Box, we're not just creating repertoire for audiences, like that's B2C. We're going to have animations and some engaging episodes on YouTube, but also we're trying to create a package that we can supply to the institutions so they can use those to minimize the prep time and the cost for their children's music program. And in the result, they will have higher quality concerts and experiences with less than 1/10 of cost and prep time.
Sounds like a fabulous project. What I'd like to do is to take that and put it in the context of Unboxed Musicians. Let's start that part of the conversation this way. What problem is Unboxed Musicians designed to solve?
So the classical music concerts are so formalized, there's nothing new to expect. And we have a big competition, YouTube. Anyone can experience Berlin Phil from YouTube at home for free, right? So when they are going into the concert hall, I feel obligation to create something new for them, provide something new for them that is on top of just listening to music. So that is what I'm trying to give to the audience. As well as, I think there's some prejudice against contemporary music. Like when people think of contemporary music, they think Schoenberg, which is 100 years ago, right? And I feel like with a little more help with interdisciplinary elements, whether that is a talk or art or visual projection or anything else, it could help them understand new music a lot more. I personally experienced this at New York Symphony, where I was giving a pre-concert talk to the audience about Schoenberg. And then, you know, after that, they were just laughing and they said they're understanding the music more, why Schoenberg wrote such terrifying music, for example. So I think right context is very important for the audience to understand the contemporary music. And for musicians and artists, we exist to achieve two things simultaneously. One is financial sustainability, and second thing is artistic sustainability.
What do war lessons from Gaza, rethinking education, peace in Ukraine, and visionary leadership have in common? They are all themes from recent episodes of this podcast. Check out more episodes on talbergfoundation.org or on a platform of your choice.
So the problem on the one hand is changing the audience experience, given all of the competition available. And from the artist's point of view, making new music creation sustainable in a financial sense, but also in a marketing sense.
Yeah, exactly.
How does Unboxed Musicians try to solve those problems for not just you, but presumably for other Unboxed Musicians?
So, Alan, how familiar are you with this commissioning system or old model for composers to create new music?
The existing system, of course, is commission-driven.
Yes.
That requires a commissioner and a commissioned, and the whole process of getting known and having commissions, et cetera, which is difficult. Entry level is complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Question is, given that reality, you seem to be talking about a packaged commission model.
Yes.
Which I suspect is new thinking. What is a packaged commission model?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so as you said, the existing model is a commission model, which is given to top 1% of the composers who already have substantial portfolio. And another problem with that existing model is that it's one-time commission. There's not much follow-up after that. So after the composers create the music, and then there's a premiere, maybe 3, 10, if they're big composers, they have to sort of let the music follow its fate, right? It's quite different from the pop music model. In classical music model, it's quite passive, and it takes years for the piece to be known if it is rediscovered. So unboxed musicians try to solve both of these problems. So this package commission model is designed to support early career composers, especially those composers who never had commissioned before. So first of all, we are providing an educational opportunities with 12-week workshop on Zoom with different composers and librettists, and I'm part of the faculty as well. So they can really have assistance in creating the level of art that both can help them in terms of their portfolio, but also guarantees Mini Music Box to have high quality art at the end. And secondly, we are providing professional portfolio. So they will have a really cool recording and people can Google you out, basically. That's very important now. And they have that one line in their resume that they had their commission from Mini Music Box, and it gives them that credibility that opens the door for many more opportunities. And lastly, we're trying to bring some financial incentives to them. So, you know, for early career composers, it's very common for them to work for free, basically, or they have to pay to get their pieces played by professional ensemble. And here I'm trying to get them a little bit of money upfront as honorarium, but also keep paying them out some royalties as we continue to market this music and creating different versions of music that we can supply to the institutions I told you about within that package.
So to drill down a little further, who pays, what do they pay for, and how do the artists earn money over time, which you identified earlier as one of the problems? One-off is a difficult way to make a living.
So Mini Music Box is a B2B2C model. So we have two target audience here. We have B2C audience through YouTube channels and ebooks. There will be some materials available online and globally. And B2B partners will be the institutions who are already providing these children's music program. And they're in desperate need of new repertoire and for classroom as well. They don't really have much resources out there. So we are trying to create a really nice package and turnkey solution for these institutions. So that will be our primary revenue. And then as it builds up, we're going to consolidate this B2B2C model, because the more this music are known and played, there will be demand for the live concert as well. So this is like a positive feedback loop that is reinforcing each other. Yeah, and I forgot to tell you, there are two really cute characters and we're going to have colorful paintings with that. And yeah, when creating these children's music series, we also consider parents as well, because they are also the audience and primary caretakers. They choose what they are going to play for kids, right? So that is another aim. We also satisfy the parents with high artistic quality. So yeah, that's our plan.
And do you see this as, in terms of markets, do you see this as a global phenomenon?
So one of the perk of being a musician is that your friends are everywhere in the world. So, yes, I am aimed to have this available globally. I already have friends in Montreal, in Miami, in Korea, and of course here in Australia, I'll do it myself, who are interested in bringing these packages and trying. Yeah, and these packages have incredibly low localization cost, about $700 per episode. So I can replicate this package in many different languages. And, you know, think of Baby Shark. It has 16 different versions in different languages. So that is something I can do easily. And the trend I see everywhere, actually, in Korea, Australia, in the US as well, is that there are more and more interest in children's music program. So I think people are now shifting their focus to really growing the next generation of the audience. And I expect that there will be more demands for our project as well.
You come at all of this as a musician. Your background is in music. I've read your interviews at Yale and elsewhere that you had to learn a new language. You had to think differently about challenges and problems. And obviously, as our conversation over the last half hour has demonstrated, you have a business mindset as well as a music mindset. Was it difficult to learn that new language, that language of business and of business framing?
Well, for myself, I think it was just a moment that I shifted the perspective. Like, money-wise, I was always aware because I started working when I was 15 and I was quite independent since I was 18 growing up. So I had to know about money. But then thinking of the business, which is more like not just making money for myself to pay for a living, but also I have to create revenue for everyone else who's involved in my project, right? That's when I started shifting my thoughts and thinking, how can I get this revenue? How can I help other musicians shift their thinking? Because sad thing is that classical musicians, they are so accustomed to be selected, not creating revenue for themselves. So what happens is that they are undervaluing their work, basically. So one of the projects I did in the past, I was talking to one of the musician artists, and I was trying to get the money, basically. I was like, guys, I will negotiate and try to get you something at least. And then they were like, well, I don't need money. I'm thankful that people are listening to my music. I can work for free because it's new music. It's their own music. So they are not thinking that this creates value for the audience because they're so used to that, that this kind of concert has to be free, no? And on the other side, they are trying to get jobs that actually gives them real security, real money. So they're sort of accustomed to follow the security rather than what they're really passionate about. And yeah, there's also a culture of not paying for a concert ticket or not paying for these like small concerts, like you're paying for coffee, right? So there was an interesting data I saw where this organization shifted free concerts to pay what you wish. And interestingly, when the audiences were paying for their own tickets, even if it's like $5, the attendance rate was much higher by 40%, as I remember. And yeah, their satisfaction level was higher as well because people value more what they're paying for. So I think at the end, I want to create this culture of paying for the art they're appreciating, not just because, you know, I want money, but then in capitalist society where clappings doesn't pay rent and, you know, people are giving gifts as appreciation, right? And I think giving money to concerts so the concert can keep going can be also a way for people to value the art a little more and then, you know, keep the things they love going as well. So yes, those are two thoughts and experience that made me shift from my own entrepreneur to actual venture leader.
So let me ask a last question. Fast forward 5 years, it's 2031. What would prove that Unboxed Musicians was a success?
Well, first of all, I think it will look like having an engaged, loyal audience base that allow us to operate without desperately relying on grants. And then we would have built a creative ecosystem where we're generating enough revenue to consistently hire musicians and artists and pay them what they are actually worth and ensuring that the creation of the new works never stops.
And on that notice, we will stop. Yi Jianmin, thank you very much for this conversation. It's a fabulously interesting project. There's very few musicians I know who understand that the price of zero means the value is zero.
Yeah.
So I wish you the best of luck in on your crusade, but a crusade with a purpose to make good business for good music. Sounds wonderful.
Thank you so much, Alan.
Thank you for listening to this episode of New Thinking for a New World. I'm Alan Stoga, podcast host, and I look forward to your joining our next conversation. Remember, tell us what you think at telbergfoundation.org.